Well, good morning.
Good morning.
Good evening. I am way off here. The election's got me thrown off completely. Good evening. Thanks for coming tonight. This is the third of three public forums that the district has conducted to talk about the Diablo Canyon closure and the academic programs, and we're very pleased that you're here tonight in Morro Bay. My name's Dave Cox, and let me introduce to you Maggie Cox in the back. We are principals with Barnett Cox and Associates, and we're helping the district to facilitate these meetings and a few other meetings along the way for this. Let me mention before we get started there how this evening is going to go. It's going to be really in two phases. First will be a presentation by our panel up here, followed then by public comment on anything on your mind with regard to this. On our panel, for those of you who don't know, and I have to believe you all know him, Dr. Eric Prater, who is our superintendent, Mrs. Kimberly McGrath, who's a secondary director of learning, achievement, and innovation, and Ryan Pinkerton, our assistant superintendent for business and support. We also have here two of our trustees. Marilyn Roger is here, and Catherine Eisendrath Rogers. No relation, I don't think, other than they're sitting together. We also have a number of district staff here tonight who's helping out with everything. They're here because they want to hear your comments. It's very important to them, and anything that comes up, you have any questions or anything during the process, you can talk to one of them, and they can help you out. Tonight's an opportunity for you to speak, as I mentioned before, about and share your ideas, your concerns, ask your questions about the district's academic program and about the Diablo Canyon closure. It's a very straightforward meeting about that issue and nothing more. We've tried to organize it so it's very efficient. We have a couple of microphones for testimony, and hopefully we can get you out here in a nice and a reasonable hour. It is, after all, school night, so we need to be able to do that. Kim Holmes is up here. She's going to be taking copious notes of everything that that you have to say, and those notes will be posted on the district's website eventually. And let me mention a couple other things. We have a translator here tonight for anybody that would like that service. The restrooms are located down that hallway over to that side. And I believe I've covered everything to this point. I'd like to turn the meeting over to Dr. Prater.
Well, good evening, everyone. I want to thank you all for coming tonight, and I just want to start off by saying that this seems a bit formal for such a small group. But you don't know when you plan these things that it'll be a small group or a large group. So I apologize for the formality here. I'm really an informal person. I'd just as soon be sitting right over there with you and get everybody in a circle and talk. But I went through all this trouble. And the structure of this, I hope you don't take offense to it. The structure of it really is to promote efficiency and, you know, and encourage people to sort of speak up and share their thoughts. Also, capturing your words accurately is important because we have Mrs. Holmes over there, as Dave mentioned. And those comments are going to be important to us because we use those in the process that we've unfolded. And I just want to take a moment, if I could, and show you where you can get information as we move along. So we're still in the very beginning stages of this. We found out in June this summer that really our worst fears, which for a district that receives a good deal of funding from Diablo Canyon's nuclear power plant, and we have for over three decades, we've grown accustomed and acclimated and to its largesse, to what it's provided us. And in June, I learned that that was going to go away. And so what I have worked towards is trying to generate a more of a public outreach and educational environment where we can reach out to parents, learn your thoughts, and capture them, and also provide the facts as they unfold. So what you have here on our website are three, three of those green icons up there. If you focus on the two on the left, the Measure D information, that's our facility bond, and I'll talk about that in a moment. And then the Diablo Canyon closure impact. That's where, if you click on that, right on the front of our website, you'll go to these yellow icons. And those yellow icons will provide you with more information than you can imagine. You'll know what I know when you click on that right there. And there are some things that we're working on that are not there, but for the most part, what I know and what I'm able to provide in a public session will go here, including the minutes of this evening. So at the bottom right-hand side, you'll see in red the email link. So if you click on that link, you'll be able to effectively send an email with your thoughts, comments that might bubble up in your mind in the next few days or months. And that email goes to my assistant, Kim Holmes. She shares that with me. And then I will get back to you. I will answer you. I will do my best to respond to you. So my intention is to be open with all of you, to share with you what I have, hear you, listen to you, and do my best to be responsive to that. This is a very difficult situation, but there are some things that we're very proud of. And Kim, could I move forward? So I'll keep this as brief as I can so that we can provide you with plenty of opportunity to speak with us. So as all of you know, we're super proud of the school district and the schools within that in our district. We have exceptionally well and high performing schools from elementary through high school, and we exceed the county in terms of our performance standards. So our kids do really well. In addition to that, our students don't just do well in the classroom, they do well in the community. By and large, our student body engages, whether it's on beach cleanups, whether it's in surf camps, clubs. You see our students out on the fields, out in the community. By and large, throughout our district, our students are respectful, are engaging, and have a purpose. And I'm super proud of that. I really am. Because that ties directly to the parents in the community. It is you, the parents, I assume most of you are parents, but I assume that, and I, being a parent myself, I take great pride in how my own children behave in society. Developing that is an important piece in improving our communities and our society in general. So for me, I appreciate our parent engagement. I appreciate our student engagement. We have exceptional, I consider them to be the best teachers, the best support staff that I've ever worked with. And I've worked in three or four different districts. The employees we have are top notch, and we're super proud of that. We also have a broader community that's philanthropic, is engaged, cares deeply about wellness, and for me, that's a great thing to be to be a part of. The last thing that I wanted to say is that we have exceptional revenue streams. So that's why we're here tonight, because one of the several things I just mentioned has to do with the Diablo Canyon or the PG&E revenue stream that we've enjoyed for over three decades, to the tune of about $8 to $10 million annually. And so we've grown accustomed to that in our budget. And I will say to you, we are going to resolve this issue. We're well on our way putting those pieces together. However, it won't be easy. It will not be easy, and I don't want to stand here before you tonight and suggest that it will be. So what I am here tonight to say is that regardless of losing $8 million by 2024-2025 from our general fund budget, we're still going to have exceptional schools, we're still going to have a great district, still have a wonderful community, because despite those revenues, what really is at the heart and core of our district are the parents, the students, and a caring, thoughtful community. So I just wanted to share that. So what are we currently doing? So when the board heard in June that PG&E was going to close. They, the board took it upon themselves to demand access to the table, so to speak, with PG&E. And the way that we can do that as a public agency is to file for intervener status with the California Public Utilities Commission. It's a mouthful. And so the board chose to do that. And in effect, it's a fancy way of saying, while we weren't part of the joint agreement that PG&E forged with their employees and their management group, while we were not part of that agreement and an environmental group, while we were not a part of that agreement, we have a lot to say because we're the largest public entity impacted by that closure. So we did do that. But while we did that, we have also been in constant contact with PG&E themselves. So we've been actively negotiating with PG&E, and I want you to know that I can't disclose where we're at right now, but we're close. And we believe that we have moved quite a distance in securing some resources for our district over that duration of till 2024-25, and when those details come out, we will share them publicly. That's an important piece to this puzzle. Also, we have to work actively to assume that we're going to fall out of our current funding model, which is known, and you'll hear more about this, known as basic aid funding status. And we will likely fall into or transition to, I shouldn't say fall, even though it'll feel like we're falling, transition to state-funded or local control funding formula model or a state-funded model. And so in order to do that, we have to align our expenditures to our anticipated revenues. And that could happen as early as 2021, 2022. And so we have to work towards that $8 million reduction over the next 5 to 6 years. And I will say it again, despite those ominous and future reductions that we're going to have to make, we're still going to focus on the classroom, our students, doing the best we can by our kids and our staff. So I would like to, let's see if I covered everything, that to keep this in mind, that this is a we event, as you can see. This is really important because the loss of Diablo Canyon isn't just going to impact our school district. The loss of Diablo Canyon will impact all of us. You can't take a facility that produces that kind of revenue and those kinds of jobs and not expect a county to feel that impact. We're one of several entities that are going to feel that loss. And therefore, I say to you that we're better off working together, knowing full and well that myself, on behalf of our school board, need to make some very difficult decisions, which is why I'm here tonight to ask you your feedback. And by the way, I'll come back to you next fall and ask you again once we refine this a little more. So I want to get to this really important point, which is all of you should know by now that we passed a facility bond measure in 2014 called Measure D. And that facility bond measure is $177 million committed to improving and modernizing our facilities, most specifically our two comprehensive high schools. Those are the places where we're really focusing those revenues and that energy. Now, some of you might say, well, why don't you stop doing that and use those monies and put it towards the loss of Diablo Canyon? And I'm here to tell you tonight that you can't. I'm here to tell you tonight that the voters voted specifically for that bond measure to go towards facility improvements, not salaries, not to save us from this unexpected loss. So I really want you to hear that from me and know that that's important. And so finally, we've identified five areas because we're all about framing this properly as we can because it's a massive, complex problem for us. So we've identified five areas that Mrs. McGrath will talk about that really make us unique, we believe, because of that revenue, because of 3 decades of wonderful revenue. We in San Luis Coastal have been able to benefit from that by way of five things. And Mrs. McGrath will talk to you about those five things. And again, I wish it didn't feel so structured like this, because I really want to get out there and talk to you in a more informal manner. But just suffice it to say that tonight we really are here to hear from you as well. So, Mrs. McGrath.
Good evening. I have two things to share with you tonight. One is, as Dr. Prater said, what has this additional revenue allowed us to do? How do we look different in our district compared to others because of that revenue? And then the second is our district goals. So we have six district goals that I would like to share with you. It's also helpful for your comments and information that you give us tonight to focus around these different areas. That's helpful to us. So if you can kind of keep those in mind as you're giving comments tonight. So first of all, we think about, how has this additional revenue really made a difference for San Luis Coastal? How do we look different than perhaps neighboring districts because of it? So there's really five areas. One is professional development. So we think about the training opportunities that especially our teachers have been able to participate in because of this funding. As we had some major changes in education like Common Core or our Next Generation Science Standards coming, teachers have really had the opportunity to have extensive training, which is showing in our achievement. They really have embraced it and worked together, learned from one another, and learned from experts really all around in order to do an amazing job with our students. The second piece is kind of programs and services. So we think about there's programs that we're able to offer. You think about counseling at all the levels, right? It's not too frequent that you find counseling services into the depth that we have at every level from elementary through our comprehensive high schools. You look at things like parent education, technology, different programs and services that we've been able to offer to our students because of these additional revenues. The third piece is salaries, benefits, and working conditions. We're able to really draw in some of the very best and to keep some of the very best because we've been able to pay educators well. And we're proud of that. It's something that we, we're happy about, that we've been able to pay teachers and all staff really well. And these additional revenues have allowed us to really draw in and keep fantastic employees. Class size. So class size is something that even though we're legally allowed to have class sizes higher, our revenues have allowed us to keep our class sizes lower. You're going to find lots of variations. It's tricky when you think about just your own class size, because the next one I'm going to talk about is school size. Sometimes, those things get tricky with combination classes. You might find one class size high but lower on the other side. But when we look at averages, our class sizes as an average are lower than many surrounding places that you would find. The last of those five is school size. It's something that we value. It provides an opportunity for schools to be small in size, for there to be really a tight community, and for the staff members to really know their students well, and for the community to feel a connection to their school. It's something that we're proud and glad that we've been able to do, but it does have an additional cost to it. And the second piece I would like to cover with you is what we call our LCAP. We have a lot of letters in education, but it's basically, here's our six focus areas is what we think of it as. So what are the six areas where we're trying to focus and trying to make growth, make development, and really help our students? So those areas are mathematics, English language arts and literacy. You have STEAM, which is science, technology, engineering, arts, and mathematics. And basically, this means we're looking for ways for information to be integrated, for kids to see real, modern instruction that's connected to what they're going to see in real life. A culture of care. So basically, what that kind of means is we care about the student as a whole, right? It's not just about academics within a school. We care about the entire student being developed. Technology and innovation, we want our instruction to be modern, right? We want students to be prepared for the college and career opportunities that they have ahead of them. And then the final focus area for us is our use of data to improve achievement. We want to be smart about our decisions, right? We want to be able to use data and information to be able to work smarter, not just harder, and to use specific information to help us to drive our decisions. So got a buddy over here? Yeah? nice. I like it. So those are the two areas that I wanted to talk to you about. One is just how have these revenues allowed us to do things above and beyond, and the second is our six focus areas. Any comments that you could make around those areas is really helpful to us, and I will hand it over to Mr. Pinkerton to talk to you about the financial part.
So yes, Dr. Prater kind of alluded to in terms of our budget. So the best way for me to kind of explain what a basic aid school district is kind of this description that you see, this picture that you have. So there's two different types of districts. One is a state-funded district where they receive, you know, kind of a set amount per student, which we'll talk about. And then there's basic aid where we get to keep our excess property tax. So what happens is, if you imagine a glass of water, property taxes for most districts across the state of California may fill that glass up halfway, three quarters. And then the state would come in and they basically give the rest of the revenue to fill the glass up full. That's what a normal, you know, state revenue, what they call LCFF, local control funding formula district has. Well, in San Luis Obispo, in Los Osos Moro Bay, in our district, we actually have more property tax revenue than the state gives out. So we get to keep all that extra revenue that comes in. Well, a significant portion, 10% of our budget, comes in because of Diablo Canyon, so the $8 million that Dr. Prater talked about. So a large amount of that excess money or the excess water that you're seeing is because of Diablo Canyon. So that's why we've been able to do a lot of those programs and the five things that Mrs. McGrath discussed. So in the next slide, if you look at that, a breakdown of what those revenues look like. And again, I'll go a little bit kind of in depth, but if you go on the county property tax assessors, you can basically see kind of all the information for all the school districts, all the sites, those types of things. But the local tax revenue that we receive, property tax, is broken up into a couple of areas. So the biggest amount is the secured taxes. So your homes, businesses, those types of things that are secured to the ground. We also receive money for unsecured taxes, which is things like boats and trailers and, you know, anything that we receive property tax on, but it's not secured to the ground. And then there's a little bit of what's called homeowners money. And so that represents that $54,800,000. The unitary tax is basically the amount of money that's attributed by the unitary, or the kind of the tax on utilities, which is Diablo Canyon for the most part in our county. And because Diablo Canyon is located within our district boundaries, we receive a majority of those revenues. So our percentage is 35.6% of the unitary tax we receive. Other districts may receive 1% or 2%. But solely because it's in our property tax realm, basically, we receive the extra funds. So that when we look at the $10,723,000 that we currently receive, that eventually will be about $2,500,000, $2,700,000 by the time the plant fully depreciates and closes. Okay, we get a little bit of railroad tax as well to kind of make up the overall tax revenue base. So if you look at the next slide, the unitary tax, what Diablo Canyon is talking about doing is basically beginning to depreciate the plant from now until 2025. So over that 9-year period, the plant will slowly depreciate in value. It's kind of like you have a new car, you drive it off the lot, every year you drive it, the property value goes down, so it depreciates in value. So our district will receive $783,000 less this year. The following year, $1.5 million less. So that $8 million basically whittles down to, at the very end, 25, 26, all of, you know, that's an annual ongoing loss of revenue stream to the district. So that's what we're talking about, right? That amount of money. Now, should the plant close earlier than that for some unforeseen reason, even though PG&E said they're going to keep the plant open through that time, the 7, 6, 8, 9 would jump up to that whatever year that is. Plant closed in 2020. That would be the year that we would lose that amount of money. Okay? So that's kind of the gradual loss. Now, if we're able to, of course, get a deal with PG&E, make up for some of those funds, that will help us in terms of really being able to maybe, through attrition, through other means, make these, you know, adjustments in our expenditures and bring those in line over that time period. So that's something we're definitely working on and fighting for. But at the end of the day, realize it's going to be $7.6 million. So if you look at our overall tax history, so that amount has risen by about 4.35% if you look at kind of from 2001 until today. So that's the average amount we've received. Much of that can be attributed, that percent, to the beginning of the 2000s. So anybody that bought a home in 01, 02, you're doing pretty well right now, right, in terms of the values have increased dramatically during that time. Recession, 2008 to about 2010, property taxes were 0%. So, again, but on average, if you break it out over that whole time period, that's about what our average increase in taxes is. So what that means to our district is we receive, through our property taxes, about $95, $94.68 per pupil, per student. Now, if you look at the state formula on the next slide, what if we were a state-funded district? What if we didn't have that and for some reason we fell into state funding? You could see the difference. So roughly, you know, kindergarten through third grade, it's about $7,800, 4 through 6, $71. So, I mean, when you look at that per pupil times 7,000 students, it's a significant amount of money, right, in terms of the drop in revenue for us. And very different in terms of as a basic aid school district, whether we have 10 kids or 10,000 students, we receive the same amount of money. So there's not really an incentive for a basic aid school district to take more students in, right? Now, as an ADA district, a local state funded, the more students you have, the more money you take in. So it's just another, when we discuss the potential of falling out of basic aid status, it's something that it kind of changes the game a little bit for the district. So kind of, you know, last slide, just to end, again, reminder that we're looking at approximately an $8 million loss in revenues, annual ongoing loss in revenues by 2025, if not earlier, that we're dealing with. And then the key thing for people to really understand, because it came up a little bit at our last meeting, why don't you just buy computers, don't buy Chromebooks, and so realize that 87% of our budget is people. So we're a people organization, a school district. And so when we talk about $8 million in reductions, we have to really think about 87% of that, or about 7 million of it, is going to be people. And so that is the toughest part, I think, of what we face in terms of, you know, looking at these things. And so it's just something, you know, in terms of the overall, where we're at, where we're headed, those are kind of the key things that I think are important for you to know.
Great. Thank you. Thank you. Now we'll move into the second part of our meeting, which is where we hear from you. Before we do that, though, we had a couple more board members sneak in. They were late for class, but we're not going to make fun of them or anything. Mark Buckman is sitting in the back. Thanks for being here, Mark. And Jim Quisenberry, in the front of the class, is here also as well. As you noticed when you came in, there's a table up here at the front that has speaker cards. If you would like to speak tonight, and we hope you will, please fill out one of the cards with your name and the subject you want to speak to. We have two microphones up here for you to come up, and I'll call the names as I get the cards in the order that I receive them. You have 2 minutes to speak. And right next to the projector here is a little box with some lights on it. And when you have a minute left, you'll see a signal that you have a minute left. When you have 30 seconds left, I believe the yellow light comes on. And when the red light comes on, that means your 2 minutes are up. So if you could wrap up what you're talking about at that point, that would be really good. If you do go over, I will ask you to wrap up your comments. One of my big important jobs here to do something like that. So what we found in the last two meetings we've had is that a lot of questions come up when people are up making their comments. We will wait until the end of all the comments before the panel will then answer the questions on all of that. So please go ahead and get up a card. We encourage you to speak. A couple of other things that I want you to keep in mind. There are no bad ideas or stupid questions. We really encourage you to ask what's on your mind, to speak what's on your mind, because your opinions, your suggestions, your ideas are what the staff is here to hear. They really are here and are very receptive to what you have to say, as Dr. Prather mentioned earlier. So with that, I think I've covered it all. I hope I have. Our first speaker is Anna Masick, followed by Heather Mattson.
Wow. I'm not really good at formal public speaking, so I prepared. Hi, my name is Anna Massey, and I am a parent of two daughters that attend Del Mar, and I am a fortunate part-time teacher here as well. First, I want to say thank you for holding these public forum meetings. I believe this is an opportunity for the public to voice what issues are most important in regards to their children's education. As a parent, my top priority is to oversee the overall well-being of my girls. I want them to have a well-rounded education with optimal learning environments that include not just work with their heads, but with their heart and hands as well. But most importantly, I want them to feel safe, cared for, and noticed. And I believe one way to achieve this when they are in the school setting is to have less students in a classroom. Before children, I taught second grade for 7 years just over the hill in Paso. Class sizes at that time for K-3 was 20-1. It was amazing. When my family decided to transition to public school after spending 5 wonderful years at a private-inspired Waldorf school 2 years ago, I was shocked to find out that the 20-1 ratio was gone. In all honesty, my husband and I thought twice about making this change. As we transitioned, my daughters lost out on enrichment activities and the personal attention received by having a smaller class at their prior school. Small class sizes do make a difference. The benefits are many, from creating personal relationships between students and their teachers to modeling and implementing proper behaviors for lifelong learning. I am so happy to know and work with excellent teachers here at Del Mar, some who, in spite of having large class sizes, rise to the challenge and do so with a big heart. I understand that cuts will need to be made, and a good place to start, in my opinion, is technology in the programs and services focus area for the lower grades. Computers and Chromebooks will never take the place of human connections with teachers and their classmates. I am asking you to please make cuts as far away as possible from the classroom and their students. Thank you.
Thank you. Heather Mattson, followed by Angela Avila.
Hi, I'm Heather Mattison. I started Mothers for Nuclear, and I want to say, what would be even better than having to try and cut to do reductions or to try and make up the money is just to keep the plant operating. And this is my daughter Zoe. She goes to C.L. Smith. There's more than one reason to do this. It's not just power for our community and economic improvements and impacts to our schools and stuff, but it's actually one of the best things for the environment is to keep nuclear power running. We've seen as plants shut down around the country that they're often replaced by fossil fuels and emissions go up. And so I think that's negative progress in terms of climate change and air pollution and lots of other things. And I would like all of us to ask questions about why this is happening and what are the true impacts of nuclear. If you have concerns about it, please get them answered. And what else? I guess that's it for now. We have a website, mothersfornuclear.org. If you have questions, please ask us. And we think it really is the best thing for everyone involved to keep the plant open. Thanks.
Thank you. Angela Avila, followed by Kristen Zaitz.
Hello. I wasn't sure what I was going to say, so I'm going to speak from my heart right now, or from without any prepared notes other than scribbled on here. I have two children. I have a child at Loams and then a son who's a freshman at Morro Bay High School. And that idea of culture of care, I can attest to from my children's point of view. Their teachers know them. When there's been articles about them in the newspaper, we hear about them. We see that their teachers see them at the soccer field or wherever it is out about the community. And that makes such a difference, not just for my students, for my children, but for all the students. So I wanted to discuss that. The other thing, I'm also a fourth grade teacher, and so putting my teacher hat on too, thinking about, and I understand cuts need to happen, they're going to happen, is figuring out creative ways to help them stay away as far away from the classroom as possible, especially considering the curriculum we have now, the Reader's Workshop, the Writer's Workshop, our math program that we have that is very intensive to plan for, to deliver. It's really good. I like it. But thinking about having combination classes, which I understand is a reality, I have a lot of friends and a sister who teach in other parts of California, and I understand that's a reality, is also helping teachers think of creative ways to meet everybody's needs, especially when we have possible combination classes and the curriculum we need to deliver. So that's what I wanted to say. Thank you.
You turn that on. Kristen Zaitz, followed by Hillary Sanner.
Hi. Thank you. Thanks for the presentation again. I'm excited to hear that you guys will be doing this again in the fall. I just wanted to ask one question. Is this presentation available on your website so that we can share it with friends and neighbors who weren't able to make it? I appreciate it, especially liking numbers. I liked seeing the money slides and how it works. I think that might clarify things for a lot of people who weren't able to make it. And then on the money slide,
hi.
Boy, that's the thing to do. On the money slide, the tax money, you know, in 2024 and 2025 when the plant shuts down, yeah, honey, can mama talk? It doesn't go to zero, and I think that's the implication when we say the money's going away. PG&E's still paying taxes. They still have a facility out there, right? So maybe I've heard some comments in the past about PG&E is not paying taxes anymore. All the money goes away. So they do still pay something. And on that note, you know, the money is going to go away to a large extent, as you explained. So I advocate for you to use your position, you know, as an intervener at the CPUC to advocate for keeping the plant open. It's a long shot, I understand, but why not?
Kiki, can I see my notes?
And then just a note to the community, you know, that Dr. Prater and all you guys just explained really well to us what's going to happen. It's going to be a real impact that we're all going to feel, not just in the school district, but around the community. And so let's be kind to one another and understand that the school district is going to face some hard times and there's going to be some hard decisions ahead, and we need to pull together and support them. And, you know, comments and ideas that could be helpful, you know, as they're saying, like a brainstorm, bring your ideas because we're going to need them. But what's not helpful is blame. We're all going to feel negative impacts, and it's easy to blame. I know especially America is feeling a lot of that today after the election. So let's not turn that into the same thing with the school district when we lose this money. And, you know, in terms of class sizes, I think we all want small class sizes. I certainly do for my children. I understand that decisions are going to be hard, and, you know, I hope you can keep class sizes small, but I understand that we're all going to have to give a little. So thank you.
Thank you. Just a reminder, please, if you'd like to speak, fill out forms. They're right over here on the table, and we'd love to hear from you. Hillary Sanner, followed by Melissa Jacquet.
Well, I'm Hillary, and I have a son who just started here in kindergarten, I know. But I love the school, and it's been an amazing couple of years so far. I also just want to say thank you to our board for, leading us through this and making these forums open and as transparent as they can be. We really appreciate that. I think it's easy to lead in good times. It's not so easy to lead in tough times. And so we appreciate your foresight and thought and care with all of this. I would just like to say, in my time here at Del Mar, what I've noticed is that, as many of the speakers previously have said, class size has an enormous impact on this experience of our children. Particularly in the lower grades, but I think the culture of care that people have mentioned goes all the way through. And I recognize that the support that we can give to our teachers is really important as well. I think we are asking our teachers at the moment to, not just at the moment, but we ask our teachers to do a lot. We ask them to deliver quality, complicated curriculum. We ask them to deal with all sorts of children who come to school with all sorts of issues, ranging from learning problems and challenges to, oh gosh, you name it. And they bring it with them, as we know, as I know my son does too. So I feel like if we can offer them support in any different ways, that would be a real help. So thank you.
Thank you. Melissa Jacquet, followed by Richard Gallegos.
Hi. Just thank you for coming out tonight and sharing with us this plan. I understand cuts. I was a RIF teacher from LA, so I understand. And when we came up here, I just want to express that we love this district. And we love Del Mar. Like, I'm just overwhelmed by just how my kids are thriving, and the teachers that they've had have just helped them in so many ways. And I just want to see that continue. But I know in this endeavor that we are facing that some things are going to change. And I understand that. One thing I just wanted to bring to the table, I was just hoping that through this endeavor that the arts aren't going to be cut too much. My son's in band this year, and I'm so excited for that. My daughter's in third grade, and I'm scared that she won't get the opportunity in fifth grade to be a part of the band. So that kind of concerns me that won't be, you know, because we maybe don't have the extra funds to send her to music class or something. So it's great that opportunity is here, and I hope that still continues. One question I have, I don't know, maybe this is like a shot in the dark, but there were some props that were just voted on yesterday. I was wondering, I don't know if this even can happen, but would any of those have any impact on our district? Any funding that comes through the state like that?
Sure. Why don't we wait?
Okay.
Because we may have some others. But
okay.
That's a good question.
Okay.
That's a good question. Richard Gallegos, followed by Daniel Holgren.
Good evening. My name is Richard Gallegos. I'm a Cal Poly credential candidate, and I just wanted to speak on behalf of my colleagues who cannot be here tonight because they're studying. And I just wanted everyone to know that I've graduated from Morro Bay High School. I went on to Cuesta, and I got my bachelor's in child development from Cal Poly. And my brother, Michael Derek Gallegos, was a Del Mar Dolphin here. He passed away a couple of years ago to an accident. And I have personally volunteered here at Del Mar. I've gone to Baywood. I'm also at Hawthorne Elementary. So I see a lot of great teaching. And my question for this board is, what would the job outlook for future teachers look like and resource availability look like over this time? There's a lot of candidates from up and down the state that come to Cal Poly to become the best of the best. And for us, the Learn by Doing motto and also San Luis Coastal go hand in hand. And so to educate these amazing Central Coast students is an honor and privilege that a lot of teachers do not have. Thank you.
Thank you. Damian Holguin. I think I called you Daniel, and I apologize for that originally. Damien?
Hey, you guys doing? Damien Holguin, appreciate you guys coming and actually listening to what kind of input. It doesn't have – I know you guys don't have to do this. The school district's really great. I just want to remind everyone that we did have a power plant close here in Morro Bay. And PG&E's revenue stream kind of evaporated. It went to Duke Energy, and they pretty much never did anything with it. We're the only elementary school in Morro Bay. We used to have another one up on the hill on the other side of town, and I believe that got closed. So, and we don't have sixth grade here. Morro Bay and Los Osos, we're next to each other, but I don't live in Los Osos. The teachers here do a really great job. The principal does a really great job. I can't see where you guys could cut anymore here at this school. She's pretty much, she does it all. I like the idea of you guys adding revenue from the school up there, renting that out. That's a good idea. I just hope Morro Bay kind of gets some kind of compensation for, you know, having that there, and because we have to make the sacrifice to go over to Los Osos once they hit middle school. But just wanted to say thank you for coming, and that's about it.
Thank you.
Because my 2 minutes is up. 2 minutes?
Thanks. I have one more card from Cynthia Day, and I encourage you to please fill out a card if you'd like to speak.
I came in tonight. I had no idea what I wanted to talk about. I have two boys that attend schools in this district, one who attends preschool at the Peep Stars program here at Del Mar, and one at Baywood. We actually live about a block away. My greatest concern over what I've seen here today, and when we were looking at the budget changes that are going to occur over time, when I look at essentially $1,500 per child, that to me is a significant amount. And the areas that I think are so critical in supporting our students from the five areas that you spoke from are in, you know, obviously class sizes. Other people have mentioned that. Professional development, which I think is such a huge, valuable resource. I think our teachers absolutely need that. And I think they need to be compensated for their time while they're being, you know, trained. I wouldn't want to go to training in my job and not get paid for it. So that's something I think is a huge priority. And also, you know, salaries and benefits and working conditions. We need to attract and retain teachers and quality, you know, staff members who really care about our kids. And I think where my heart lies is in special ed, because both of my boys are involved in special ed programs. And this sort of a cut in funding is significant. And I think it could make a huge difference for our kids in programs that need these resources, and we need to consider those kids too. So that's about all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Any more speakers? Anybody else have any comments? If not, I know there was a couple of questions that were asked. And
first of all, I just want to say that I really appreciate the comments and the time that you took to be here. A number of you have not come up to speak, but you're here, and that says a lot to me. I just want you to know that. I'm pretty observant. So, Melissa, I'd like to talk to you or at least respond to your question, and I'm blind, so I'm going to try to. Will the propositions that just passed help? And I would say yes. So, what used to be Proposition 30, which was that tax extension, which got us through that recession, that horrible time, is now converted to Proposition 55. And luckily that passed. So I was on pins and needles last night, well, for a number of reasons. But Proposition 55 means $1.8 million to us every year ongoing. Big deal. So what that means is, quite frankly, it's wonderful news. But we're still going to lose $8 million. Damien, I wrote it down right. So Damien, your comment about not sure what you're going to cut at Del Mar is exactly the world that we live in, because everything we do has a purpose, a design, and everything we do is aligned to the best researched practices in the field. We were intentional about it. Our school board, some of you referred to us as the board. We're not the board. No, the board's sitting in your seats with you right now in the audience. This is, unfortunately, the school board, which are elected officials from our community, communities that we serve, they're the unfortunate ones that get to make the final decision. As to how to manage this. My job as superintendent is to get the very best information, the very best design, the very best ideas wrapped in a recommendation for our board's consideration. And I'm giving myself the best possible chance at collecting that those ideas and that information. And so I, through my lens, there's nothing... Well, let me just say it differently. There's more I want to do. And I'll tell you, there's more we plan to do prior to the news in June. We had great plans, big ideas, in addition to what we're already doing, to make it even better in our district. So we have to be adults in the room. We have to be responsible, because our budget is critical to our survival. And so we can't play around with this, and unfortunately we're going to have to make really difficult decisions. So with that in mind, yes, the propositions that passed, both 55 and 51, 55 is the extra revenue that will come to us, $1.8 million. Yes, that will help. It doesn't help us from the $8 million that we're still going to suffer from in 8 years. The Prop 51 is the bond, the facility bond measure that passed, which will augment Measure D, which we can't use to help with this problem. So the answer is, yes, we will benefit. And the answer is also, we won't benefit in this way. So so then I would like to get to Mr. Gallegos, Richard. And I have seen you out and about. I've met you before, and I've seen you in the classrooms, and I appreciate you coming tonight. And so you asked about the job outlook, specifically for San Luis Coastal. And I'll just tell you, I mean, we're super proud of our district, and we have a very good relationship with Cal Poly's Department of Education. And we're proud that many of our teachers come through that channel. So our goal, unfortunately, our goal is if a number of things can fall into place, is to minimize the loss of our teachers that we currently have, and instead try and transition those that are of our employees, our valued employees, who will plan to retire in the coming 5, 6, 7 years, and use their retirement to not have to lay off. Are you with me? Attrition. And that's the word is attrition. And that's the goal. That's our hope. And we've spent millions of dollars in developing our staff. We have, as a parent here said, Ms. Avila, our curriculum is complex by design. It requires years of practice to become skilled and exceptional in those instructional methodologies. And we have invested tremendously in those places over the last 5 years, 7 years, through a very intentional design. And we're proud of it. So this weighs on all of us very heavily. Our special ed programs are exceptional. They're models in the state and in the nation. I've never seen the level of care that exists by way of how we're able to care for our most needy students. And we have challenges. We have an achievement gap problem that we're still trying to address. I'll call it an opportunity. So there's lots of challenges in front of our team and in front of our school board. And I'm here tonight, and I will continue to be in front of you. I will gather this information, just so we're super clear. I will gather this information, and we have identified a local leader group. And it's a group of about 18 to 20 people that represent our communities. We will take this data that we've collected, this information, this feedback, and we'll circle back with that group. We've met with them once, did the same general presentation, and got their feedback, their take on it. Then we have come out. This is our third and final presentation, public forum for this year. And we'll circle back with this information next Wednesday and get their take on it again in a refined way. Then we enter January to June. And from January to June, I'm going to select a committee. I'm going to call it the Blue Ribbon Panel. Nobody wants to be on it, I'm sure. But it will be a very difficult group. Very difficult place to be, because that group will take this feedback within themes, and they will present to me ideas and concepts for generating revenue, for protecting our classrooms, to preserving the things that all of you have said tonight to the best of our abilities. I'm not smart enough to do it by myself. So that information then will come. I will share that information with our board this summer. Then what I will do is have that committee or that panel presented at a public board meeting in September, and then I'll come back and do these public forums with you and share it with you and get your feedback. I bet we're going to fill this auditorium at that point, because it'll be very specific, right? And we'll fill every auditorium I am able to plan for. And then I will put my best thinking together from that, and my team and I will present our school board February 2018 with a multi-year recommendation on how to address this issue. By then, we'll have more information. It's the best and only way I know how to do this. And I will keep you informed. I will keep adding to our website. I will keep sending information to you. We're working with Barnett Cox to help us with an annual report. That annual report will come out every year. This year, it'll come out in January, and it'll give you the best information I have with all this information you've just heard. And then every year I will keep you very much informed, and I expect there to be there will be, despite what Ms. Zaitz shared tonight, yeah, it would be great if everyone was helpful and supportive, but I understand these are not going to be easy things. And so I'm here tonight mostly to hear you and listen, knowing full and well that it'll be helpful to know who you are and for you to know me in the months and years ahead. Okay? So all of you know, I have three sons of my own in this district. So, you know, you have a superintendent with skin in the game. So I don't want to do this any more than anybody. So I appreciate you coming tonight. I really do. And you'll see more of me.
Anybody else? No? Good. Well, let me repeat. Thank you very much for attending tonight. We really are pleased to have your comments. And watch the website, slcusd.org. All the notes from tonight's meeting will be posted very quickly. And district staff will be around after the meeting if you want to talk or ask any more questions. The panelists will be here, and other staff people will be here as well. So please take care. Do that if that's what you'd like to do as well. And with that, thank you and good night.